is The Guardian. Regid Ahmed here on Gadigal Land with the full story.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, thanks for your time. What's your reaction to news of a two-week ceasefire, including the reopening, but albeit temporarily, of the Strait of Hormuz?
This is positive news, and we hope that it leads to a permanent de-escalation and an end to the conflict and a resolution that allows the world to go forward.
The US and Iran have agreed a two-week ceasefire with an understanding that Tehran will allow conditional passage through the Strait of Hormuz. In response, global oil prices plunged. But whether the pact holds is another question entirely. And the federal government says it intends to stay the course and continue to shore up fuel sources across the region, including an impromptu overseas trip by the PM to Australia's biggest petrol supplier.
This week, on Thursday, I will head to Singapore. This will be important and will continue discussions on securing our trade in petrol, diesel and LNG.
Today, political editor Tom McElroy on what the PM hopes to secure from his dash to Singapore. It's Thursday, the 9th of April.
Full Story is supported by CommBank. CommBank is dedicated to using the latest tech to create real change. From utilising agentic AI to outsmart cybercrime, to solving complex problems at scale, their teams support more than 17 million Australians every day. And you could be part of it. CommBank is looking for senior technologists to help influence strategy, security and innovation across one of Australia's leading tech environments. If you're a curious mind who thrives on collaboration and is eager to engineer real impact, search CommBank Tech Careers.
It's good to see you again, Tom.
Hi, Regid. Great to be with you.
Events are moving quite rapidly. We've had some breaking news on Wednesday. A temporary ceasefire perhaps seems to be in place with this conditional passage through the Strait of Hormuz, potentially agreed with Iran. Give us a sense of how the government's reacting to that.
The Prime Minister has spoken in the last little while. He says that it's a very positive step. The government's been calling for a de-escalation in the war involving the US, Iran and Israel, and particularly for access through the Strait of Hormuz, the strategic waterway, to be re-established. So I think they'll be happy that there's been progress from the United States and from Iran, even if it is in its most embryonic stage, even if it will be a fragile thing going forward for 2 weeks. The other thing that's been going on in the background that the Prime Minister has pointed to since news of the ceasefire came out is that Australia's been part of an international effort trying to get progress on boats getting through the strait. I think he thinks that some of those talks have been positive, including the role of China and other players in pressing for action there. So I think it's positive news, but they'll be watching it probably about as closely as everybody else to see if it sticks and if it is a step towards things getting back to normal and the war ending properly.
That's quite meaningful given we don't know what a conditional opening of the Strait of Hormuz means. So in that context, the Prime Minister is still rushing off to Singapore to try and shore up some supply.
Yeah, the PM said this week that there are annual talks between the leaders of Australia and Singapore. They were due to be held later in the year, but they've been brought forward. And I think the recognition there is that the government's throwing everything it can at trying to shore up supply of diesel and petrol into Australia, including what looks like a diplomatic full-court press across the region from the government. The PM's going to Singapore. The Defence Minister, Richard Marles, has been in Japan this week. We expect more travel to come. And there's even talk of the Japanese Prime Minister visiting Australia later in the month. So I think we're seeing every opportunity taken for some in-person diplomacy in the region, talking about the economic and geopolitical fallout from the war, but also primarily reminding people, in the government's words, that Australia is a reliable energy partner to our export destinations, and that we sincerely hope that our partners will continue to be reliable in getting fuel into Australia.
I want to talk more about that regional effort being made in a moment, but the Energy Minister, Chris Bowen, has spoken as well since this news of a ceasefire, and he's talked about what our current situation is with the supplies.
I think you can hear a hint of optimism from the government. I think they feel like some of the worst of the emergency situation has been brought under control in the last few days. The levels of petrol and diesel and jet fuel in Australia have been steady for the past week or so. Admittedly, it's, you know, in the order of 30 or 40 days, which isn't much if there's going to be a big crisis. But I think the government believes that people are coming off a little bit on the panic buying, and that some of the efforts to get fuel to the places where it's most needed, particularly regional Australia, are starting to be more successful. That being said, all of the underlying conditions are extremely fraught. So, you know, if there were disruptions into Australia from overseas, that would change things pretty quickly. But yeah, I think Chris Bowen is of the view that the government has secured supply into the month of May and that they feel confident those ships will arrive. I think they'll be working to snap up any oil they can on international markets and, as I say, try and lock in every delivery possible to keep fuel flowing into the country.
It's such a tenuous moment and a fraught picture coming out of what's happening in the Middle East and the war. And the Prime Minister has already brought this trip forward to Singapore for Thursday. What does he hope to get out of rushing over there for a face-to-face?
Having covered a few of these trips over the years, one thing that sticks in my mind is that politicians often say that diplomacy and deal making in Asia is a little bit different to other parts of the world, and that it requires in-person conversations, you know, showing up, going through diplomatic traditions and negotiating face-to-face, and not only coming when there's a crisis or when you need something, but also being there regularly so there's goodwill and good person-to-person connections. So that might be a precondition to what we're seeing this week. And as I say, the two leaders, Singapore and Australia, have regular dialogue anyway. But I think what the PM will be doing is making sure that there would be no barrier to Singapore's imports of petrol into Australia to continue, and equally that Singapore and Australia are pulling in the same direction on regional negotiations. Singapore, as the PM said this week in Canberra, is a regional leader, and other countries look to Singapore. So I think Anthony Albanese will be making sure that he's doing everything for Australia, but equally that along with his Singaporean counterpart, the two countries are doing everything in the region to calm things down, make sure that the usual supply chains are firing on all cylinders, because any disruption to that will have big fallout.
That explains why the PM is going, despite a joint commitment that they've already got sort of on paper with Singapore. How important is Singapore to our supplies?
Well, it's so interesting. On automotive gasoline, some figures from the motoring lobby, Singapore's our number one import partner for petrol. 54.7% of Australia's supplies come from Singapore. That's ahead of Korea and countries like India and Malaysia. And so I don't think there's a more important destination. One of the Singaporean ministers was in Australia last week and met with the PM and with senior ministers, but leader-to-leader negotiations, the two prime ministers getting in a room, putting flesh on the bones of this newly signed agreement, I think is pretty important from the government's perspective. And I would say one other thing. I think it's, from Anthony Albanese's view, important that he be seen to be doing it as well. And the pictures on the TV news and on social media and in The Guardian will be what the government's looking for. Voters understanding that the Prime Minister is doing everything he can to make sure that fuel supply continues.
There's always that political edge to everything, that layer. What about the Prime Minister leveraging our natural gas supply into this, especially as a lot of analysts are saying, look, you can have as many chooks as you want, but if countries need their own oil supply, they will keep it for themselves.
Yeah, I think if the crisis became more acute or if there were sudden movements from particular players to keep their own oil supply, you know, hoard things, break contracts, look after themselves first, that would be bad news for Australia. We're at the end of these supply chains, as we keep being reminded. However, we've got something to offer, as you mentioned, Regid. Australia's natural gas exports are really important in the region. Countries like Japan and Malaysia rely on Australia's gas. And we've seen a few times over recent years the government making a big effort to reassure our customers in the region, Japan primarily, that Australia isn't mucking around with gas supply and that they can rely on the contracts that are signed. The exports won't be disrupted. Some of that work in recent years will be coming in handy during this crisis, being able to say with a straight face to countries like Japan that Australia is doing the right thing by you, we'd like you to reciprocate, will be an important tool in the diplomatic toolbox. I think that's why Richard Marles is there this week. I think that's why there's talk of a possible visit of the new Japanese Prime Minister to Australia in the coming weeks.
Will it also come down to just supply going to the highest bidder? So if Australia offers the most money, we'll get it, to be a bit crass?
It's not crass at all. It's exactly what's happening. On international spot markets, you know, prices are very inflated. The government's underwriting private sector buyers so they can jump on any fuel that is available. And it's doing a lot of work to make sure we're in the right conversations around the world. And where there have been a small number of cancellations of ships, something in the order of 6 or 7 were cancelled in March and April, the government's been quick to buy more supply to make up that gap and to exceed that gap. So yeah, that's what we're seeing. And these changes to the rules for Export Finance Australia, the government agency that works with private sector businesses selling and buying commodities around the world, is proof of exactly what you say. Where there's fuel available, they're going to buy it.
Chris Bowen has been at pains to say no more tankers have been cancelled. They're all on their way. Can the government do anything more to bring prices down?
No, I think they've done everything they can there. There's been a cut to the excise for 3 months, a 50% cut, and that's an expensive thing that's costing $2.5 billion to the federal government. I think apart from reassuring and doing all the diplomatic work and doing a lot of work in the trade space to make sure boats are coming here, that's basically the full complement of opportunities the government has to bring prices down. The price is one thing, and there's a recognition from the government that that's a real challenge, not only for consumers filling up the petrol tank in their car, but also for the agricultural sector, for transport, all that kind of stuff. There's a big flow-on effect to that increase in price. However, supply and getting supply to places where there are gaps has been one of the major jobs of people like Chris Bowen in the 5 weeks or so since the war started. So, look, I think they're doing everything they can in both fronts, but further intervention on price would be difficult and expensive for the government.
We'll be right back. Tom, I want to come back to this picture you paint of new regional efforts, talking to Japan, Malaysia, China. Are we seeing some sort of new form of oil diplomacy here that Australia is pursuing, trying to create closer diplomatic ties within our region through this crisis and, by extension, a little bit of distance from the US?
I think they're cashing in on existing diplomatic networks. You know, these are the systems that exist, the structures that exist around the world for exactly this kind of moment. A lot of diplomacy, and we see a lot of it here in Canberra, is cocktail parties and meet and greet meetings and shaking of hands and signing sometimes fairly unimportant international agreements. But when the situation gets real, as we're seeing because of this war in Iran, those relationships and those structures are there for exactly this moment. So look, I think Anthony Albanese will be trying to capitalise on his relationships in the region. I think Singapore this week is a good example of that. But he'll be confident in the fact that Australia has a big diplomatic network, that we're very active in the region on trade, and there are good relationships to fall back on. If it turns into an opportunity to strengthen them and to kind of get a diplomatic dividend after the crisis, the government will be really happy with that. But as often happens when there are emergency situations, I think they're looking very much at the here and now. And really that in some ways boils down to fuel coming into Australia as much as promised and as regularly as possible.
I love that picture of a very practical Australia. It's fascinating, though, that this is all happening just after Trump singled out Japan, South Korea, Australia, you know, allies that he's really criticised, and we're talking to those allies.
Yeah, it's a good point. It shows what's happening in the geopolitical landscape. America, the great superpower of the past century, pulling back a bit. Trump doesn't respect traditional relationships, doesn't respect alliances. And if they're not in his interest in that exact minute, he'll trash them. If he needs them later, he'll come back to them. A real challenge for countries like Australia, who are practicing a more traditional international diplomacy and who are getting whiplash, frankly. You wake up every day and there's another set of comments from the American president, often mentioning Australia, and that's going to be jarring for our diplomats in the US and around the world, and it's definitely politically unsettling for Anthony Albanese. He's been a little bit critical of some of Trump's language this week, suggesting that the President of the United States might not be talking about taking Iran back to the Stone Age or blowing up the civilization like that. But mostly I think he's trying to keep his powder dry, not go too far out on criticizing Trump, knowing that Australia has real interest in the US alliance. They're our key security partner. There's big ticket things like the AUKUS agreement, and knowing that at least for the next, well, best part of 3 years, he's going to have to deal with Donald Trump as the president of the United States and the most powerful person in any room he walks into.
Tom, just finally, if we can return to this ceasefire that appears to be in place, even if the Strait of Hormuz opens tomorrow fully, how long is it going to take for things to get back to normal and to be able to say the oil shock is over?
So first things first, it's a big if. You know, a 2-week ceasefire might not hold, it might not turn into a lasting peace. But if it were to, the expectation from the government, from geopolitical experts, economists as well, it must be said, is that there'll be a very long tail to this conflict. The disruption, particularly in energy markets, is historic, and it's going to take months for it to settle down. I think there'll be lasting change as well. I think countries will look to be more resilient themselves. Australia's going to do that on energy in particular. But every expectation is that the disruption for Australia will last some time. Now, that's going to play out in a few difficult ways. Fuel suppliers getting back onto a more even keel, inflation going up in the second half of the year, big disruption for the May federal budget, which is supposedly being drafted now, but very difficult conditions. So you wouldn't envy the government of these challenges, and I think they're going to last for months to come.
Tom, thank you so much for talking to us today, even as events just keep moving.
Regid, thanks. It's really good to speak to you and your listeners.
That was political editor Tom McElroy. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria, sound design and mixing by Daniel Simo. And the executive producer of this episode is Joe Koning. Don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts, including on Spotify. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.